Welcome to Next Talk, powered by Compass Group. We're discussing how today's climate will impact the future of on-site food service. Bringing together the most innovative thought leaders, this series will explore how we adapt to the new normal, contribute to a successful outcome, and help lead the industry for the long term. Joining us today on Next Talk is Bob Gravani, Professor Emeritus of Food Science at Cornell University. He is an expert in food safety throughout the food system, including production, processing, and food service. Also with us is Tom Ford, Vice President of Compass Group's Food Safety and Quality Assurance. Now, you two have worked together in the industry for years, possibly decades, and it's just so great to have your expertise here today.
Well, thank you. And we're really glad to be here. Bob, thank you personally for joining us on this call. And
thank you so much for inviting me along today to share some thoughts and perspectives with your listeners.
I mean, you both can agree food safety is more top of mind than ever before. So, Bob, let's start. What are consumers most concerned about right now when it comes to dining outside of their homes?
Well, I think people have seen these statistics and there's a great deal of consumer concern, a little bit of tension and anxiety about personal safety, about the safety of workers in restaurants, and about being with large groups of people. And now, we want to be socially connected, and people eat at restaurants, and they're reminded of fun gatherings, they're reminded of special occasions that they've celebrated. They've also reconnect with the community when they eat in restaurants. So clearly, it's important that restaurants think about all of these things as they provide safe yet socially distanced meals. And I think they want to be, consumers want to be reassured that restaurants are doing everything possible to reduce the spread of the viruses in their facilities. And, you know, I thought of a couple of things that might be useful here. And one of them would be certainly to have some policies and procedures in place to ensure that everyone's safety is being assured and that they're communicated to folks, both internally to employees as well as to customers. And I think that's really important as we move forward, making sure that the restaurant employees stay home if they are indeed sick, that they practice proper hand hygiene at work throughout the day, that in many states they're wearing face coverings to protect themselves as well as customers, and making sure that they frequently clean and disinfect surfaces that are touched regularly, making sure that restaurants follow recommendations and guidelines from their local state and health departments to make sure they're doing everything possible, again, to allay fears and to reduce the spread of the virus.
You mentioned a lot of things that obviously in the food service world we're trying to do, and especially here at Compass. I think it really goes back to assuring that you have a sound foundation around your food safety programs. And at Compass, you know, we've developed four pillars of food safety that we built upon. And I think we could extrapolate at least a few of these to the pandemic and where we're going to go in the future. So for our food safety program, you know, it really starts with food safety. And food safety is the science behind how food is created and how it's kept safe. And it's really the backbone of our program. Each and every step and procedure a Compass associate takes has a food safety component to it, and a component that has to be delivered upon every hour, every day, everywhere, and never more important than it is now. You know, the food quality side is the second pillar. It's understanding the variations in food quality and assuring that we purchase, receive, and maintain those quality levels. Food fraud is a third one. It's a global concern, and Bob, you and I go back to where, you know, you see there's pressures on operators to take either a sourcing issue that's a stressor or a economic issue that's a stressor and try and game the system, going back to the melamine issue in China, where all that is happening, and you know, really needing to assure the customers that the food is safe and hygienic. And then food defense is protecting the food from intentional or unintentional contamination. So we have to assure the security of our food at all points of the program, from the fields, in the production facilities, through the transport process, and in our own locations. And you start with that structure, you can see that amplifying at least, you know, two of those jump out at you, is the food defense from the hygienic side. We have to prove more than ever for our customers that are sitting at our locations that the food has been protected from them, from the entire source. They're hearing about sourcing of foods and challenges there at production facilities, but the evidence that they have is only what they see in front of them. So I agree with you. We're going to have to really make it visible from the food security side to make sure that they're seeing things like an associate looks clean and is wearing a uniform, or even more importantly, that there's evidence of the disinfecting and other food security systems they want to see going on. So I envision the new post-COVID being more of this scenario where we have the associates out there actively disinfecting, being visible with that disinfectant stem, so the customers can be assured that there's really this protection for their public health going on. The perception really has changed. So years ago, I did some work where we were asking consumers about their perception of just what they see in the grocery store. So when they walk into a grocery store, they see the produce department typically first, and it's okay for them to see some dirt and soil and crates from the field, and all that gives them the reassurance that it's farm fresh and it's wholesome coming from the fields. But when they get back to the dairy department and meat department, they want to see it white, clean, sparkling. They want to know that there's some active cleaning and sanitation going on. But in the past, what the research shows, they didn't want to see the chemicals at all. They didn't want to see the associate cleaning. They wanted to know what was happening, but they didn't want to see that active visibility of the cleaning and sanitation. This has changed all that. Now they're not wanting to assume it's going on. They want to see that the disinfecting is going on. It's protecting them that way.
Safety has always been a significant part of Compass's culture, but what you're saying is continue these same best-in-class practices, but really bring them to the forefront, bring them out in front of the guests so everyone's seeing what we're doing to keep everyone safe.
I think the visibility of the cleaning and sanitizing process will help reassure consumers that that particular establishment is doing everything possible to reduce the spread of virus and make the dining experience, again, fun and something people will want to come out to participate in. Also, Tommy, you mentioned food fraud, and I think that's an important issue today, especially in the area of traceability. Companies like Compass look back in their supply chain to make sure that what they're getting and ordering from their suppliers is what it's what it's supposed to be, what it's intended to be. So when these items get on the menu, they're accurately labeled, and certainly food fraud is not an issue.
Do you think there's any immediate changes that we will see, or are self-serve stations like the salad bar becoming a thing of the past?
As restaurants reopen, people are constantly evaluating the guidelines from their state and local health departments, and I think that's going to dictate a lot of how this phase reopening is going to go. Certainly, in some of our local establishments, they've reduced the opportunity for consumers to touch products or touch areas that they would be involved in self-serve. But again, following those guidelines from state and local health departments would be very, very important as we reopen facilities.
I think that's a great point, Bob, too. And something that, you know, we instituted very quickly in the process, working with the CDC and the FDA with COVID, they were adamant that we needed to look to the local jurisdictions because there was a lot of nuances going on there right in the front as far as what were hotspots and not. And you need to take direction there. And I think that's the same approach that, you know, we're going to take going forward as we come out of this pandemic. So it starts with community. And that's a term that we came up with to sort of drive the hierarchy of what we're going to do. And that meant we were following our health department directions. And the local health department were aware of the local aspects of the pandemic. And if, you know, those superseded what our customer wanted to do, that was what we would follow locally. And, you know, things like salad bars and self-service items, that's all things that will take the direction of a local health department or the customer's second level of our hierarchy here. So if the health department wasn't giving us any directions, but our customer wanted us to have that and say, you know, we don't feel comfortable with salad bars or other kinds of interactions that way, we would take their direction. And then, of course, the last piece of it was following our compass directive. So the last of the three C's is our compass directive. So we would set the policy then on what we want to achieve based on public health, on food safety, and what we thought we can do to protect our associates as well. It really comes down to, you know, protecting the customers, protecting the associates, protecting the food, and then making the environment safe for the customer to feel really comfortable in that environment.
One area that we are hearing concerns about in the news is, you know, the meat factory closings and disruption to the food supply chain. Should we be worried here?
Well, we've seen reports of closures of several meat and poultry processing plants due to the COVID-19 illnesses among employees. And from everything that I've seen, there still will be enough meat for purchase in grocery stores. Some plants have begun to reopen, but that they opened at reduced operating levels. So there are may be some meat item shortages, yet they will be very, very temporary. There's lots of meat in cold storage, and that's destined for export, and I believe that this will go into the retail food chain. There will probably be fewer cuts available until more companies come online, but I would say that consumers should purchase what they need and not stockpile or hoard meat, because there will be plenty of meat in the system coming through.
I think it comes down to really working with your vendor community and having that relationship well established, so expectations are set, communicating expectations and holding them accountable. One thing about this industry is it's fast, it's flexible, and it's really elastic. It will respond very quickly. It might have caught us a little off guard, but I think we will snap back and we will be able to adjust very quickly. Some things are you just cannot compromise, though. You can't compromise on quality. You can't compromise on food safety. That has to be adhered to. And that really does come from that relationship, establishing that prior to the event. But as Bob says, are you going to have some things that you might not have the availability that you used to? Probably. But I don't think you'll see any concerns around food safety, food quality. And you will get back to having the expectations of the cases and opportunities and varieties that you want. It just might take a little while for that to happen.
Right. To your point, Tom, I think the food supply system is complex. It's dynamic, but it's also very, very flexible. And given the American spirit of entrepreneurism, we'll figure a way to get it from there to here to where it's needed the most. And I think that's an important proposition moving forward.
You had talked about the three C's, so getting directives in the short term really from the community, those health guidelines, and then second are our customers and clients, and then directives from Compass. So those are all great ways to make sure that we're adhering to the changes that are localized, but also establishing consumer confidence in the short term. What about establishing consumer confidence in the long term within our food safety and sanitation? How do we do that?
I think that's really important. And, you know, understanding where we were 2 months ago, understand where we are now, those are two factors. And but nobody really knows what the situation will be going forward, except that, you know, things will change from the consumer perspective. So I do think that things that will never go away will be that understanding that the customer needs to be assured that the food service operator and the industry in general is taking care of them and assuring them that, that what they're, the experiencing they're having, the food experience they're having is safe. The more visibility, the more upfront you are about that, the better, more comfortable they'll feel. I do think that, you know, the food safety side of this hasn't changed, but the food experience will change. And the way we get together and eat, it might be more mobile, it might be more separated, but obviously the food safety experience won't change. It's going to be the food experience itself that's changed.
I think that if you look at food safety and sanitation, you recognize that the food industry has always had a very robust food safety and sanitation program in place. And a number of years ago, 2011 to be exact, the President Obama at the time, signed the law called the Food Safety Modernization Act into being. And that law was the biggest overhaul in food safety laws in over 70 years. And basically, to make a very, very long story short, what it did was it really focused on prevention and preventive controls. And these preventive controls are in place across the supply chain to further improve food safety. So in other words, an industry that did a very, very good job of food safety and sanitation has been bolstered by this food safety law called FSMA. And certainly the restaurant industry has a very good track record of adhering to food safety and sanitation standards as well. Inspected by local and state health departments, They have to meet certain standards to operate, and certainly food safety is important to prevent foodborne illnesses in normal times. And now with the COVID-19 pandemic, thinking about how additional levels of food safety and sanitation are important, and the ones that we've talked about earlier. I think that restaurants need to continue to reinforce to customers that their restaurant is taking extraordinary measures above and beyond what's normally done to protect consumers as their facilities are reopened for business. So I think, yes, we've done a good job, but now with the pandemic, I think we need to step it up. And I think companies that are producing and processing and serving food, et cetera, are indeed doing that.
You're saying we should step it up. So as an on-site food service provider, how do you think Compass should shift our mindset and think about things differently when we're on the other side of this?
If you think of the spirit of continuous improvement, then I think companies like Compass, as well as other businesses, government agencies, academic institutions, are going to have to step back and evaluate and analyze exactly what took place during the pandemic. And they're going to look at and evaluate policies and procedures and plans and directives, et cetera, guidelines, and look at that experience and say, what lessons have we learned from them? And then formulate plans to provide greater services to all of their customers, clients, and constituents. And I think one of those will be certainly lots of consumer surveys to understand the pulse and the thoughts that consumers have regarding food safety and sanitation in the food supply, in restaurants, in grocery stores, in many retail food service and retail food venues, just to, again, look at what could be done differently and better as a result of all of our experiences with this pandemic. Clearly, some things were done well. What could have been done better? What could have been improved? And how can this inform us to move forward with an even more robust recommendations, guidelines, and thoughts about food safety and sanitation?
This was a learning curve in so many ways. Those of us that are around for the H1N1 or avian flu, the past, I mean, that was 10, 12 years ago. This never got to this level. That event never got to this level where we actually implemented a lot of the pandemic plans that we had written back then. This one is blown through all that, and we really have gone to this far reaches of where these pandemic plans were written. What won't change is the food safety side of this. Food safety will have to adapt to delivering of food, to spreading out the process, to making food in one place and delivering it another, or even just conveying it within a restaurant in a different way. That'll be the change that we have, is adapting the food safety to the new food experience that we'll be having.
This hasn't been a food safety problem. It's been a public health issue. And again, to that end, we really need to think about those lessons learned and what we need to do differently. And the points that you made are certainly very, very important, including things like we may be restricting the numbers of people who we allow into a restaurant at any one time. And I think a lot of this will develop as we reopen and as hopefully the virus spread subsides and we can get this way under control so that we can move into areas where we feel a little bit more comfortable in moving out of our homes due to our sheltering in place.
I think it's really interesting what you're saying, though, is there's potentially a lot of innovations coming our way when it impacts the food experience. But the lessons learned that we've had in place for years when it comes to food safety really are pretty simple and effective as long as the protocols are followed.
I totally agree with that. And Bob mentioned the Food Safety Modernization Act, which is really, you know, addressing the process of food sourcing all the way through getting to the restaurant or the grocery store. But I'll shed some light on another healthy respect I have from a regulatory standpoint that Bob and I have both been involved with, is the development of the food code. And about halfway through this process, I remember having the epiphany saying, everything we did in that food code, which is marrying science, regulatory, and operational standpoints of the food world, really came to show that it really did work. And for those of you that, you know, aren't food safety nerds like Bob and I, the food code is a guideline that was written by industry, academia, and regulatory, and it started in the 70s to unify all the codes that are around from the health departments in the United States. And it was based on science. So if you were able to address the science of food safety and put it into this code, the theory was that it would protect the food. Everybody would agree that it was based on science, and then that would become the guideline and eventually law. And when you deal with a virus, even if, though it is a public health virus in this case, understanding that the virus is addressed by the food code, and if you do everything in that food code guideline, you're protecting the food. So it gave us just this really rock solid piece to stand on, saying if we're doing everything that we should be doing behind the counter in a restaurant and in front of the counter in a food service operation, the food is safe.
It was called in the early days the Unicode to unify all of the individual state requirements. And again, some states adopted it in total, some states adopted it in part. But the bottom line is that it was a very, very useful and working document that provided those key elements of food safety and sanitation across the board for the food service industry, the retail food industry, and companies across the country follow that pretty religiously. Also, another piece is that the food service industry has done an absolutely phenomenal job of education and training for workers and managers. There are a number of certification programs available that provide the very, very basics of food safety and sanitation to workers and managers in this segment of the food system. And that, I think, is a very, very important and telling situation in that education and training has been a hallmark, and to your point before, a foundation of making sure these key elements were transmitted, transferred, and shared with people who are in the business preparing food for others, making millions and millions and millions of meals every day, every month, every year to serve the consuming public. So I think that goes a long way in addressing the fact that the food service industry has been engaged in food safety and sanitation for a long, long time.
I think that was a great point that you had there, Bob. It really does. As we try and come out of this, or food safety in general, has always been about the frontline worker and making sure that they have the information they need to do their job in the right way. And you know, you mentioned, you know, the education certification programs that are out there. That's all fantastic. And really, what we're going to need, it really goes down to that simplicity of that frontline worker, making sure that all the steps they do are food safety based, and they're the ones that have to implement food safety. You could have the best systems in place, the best regulations that we talked about, but it really comes down to assuring that that frontline worker understands their role, and more importantly, that they're the ones that are the last barrier of food safety. So how you train, how you talk to your associates, how you make them feel empowered. I think, you know, that's really where we need to be. And, you know, it's all part of, you know, food safety behavior, food safety culture. And that's the next step too. You could have regulations, you could have rules, but if you have empowered associates, you will have food safety.
Absolutely. And one of the things I like to talk about is what I call having employees in the food industry be unconsciously competent. That is, that they truly understand the practices, the principles behind what they're doing, and they, more importantly, understand why it's important for them to do it routinely and regularly every time they perform tasks. So being unconsciously competent really means that they are performing those tasks routinely because they really truly understand the nature of them and how by doing them, they'll protect the consuming public and assure that the foods that they prepare, serve, and sell are safe and wholesome and will be appreciated by their customers and their clients.
Well, we are so incredibly grateful to have experts like you two, or food nerds, I think in your words, guiding us to serve the safest food, make sure we have the utmost in training, so we can serve it safely and really reassure our customers so that they feel good and welcome coming back to dine with us. We would like to close out each episode with a speed round as a way for our listeners to get to know you a little bit better. So, Bob, we'll start with you. What are you most excited about doing once social distancing is over?
Well, a couple things. One is to travel to see family and friends that we have put on hold during this whole pandemic situation. And no kidding around, I'm looking forward to going out to restaurants to enjoy a good meal. It's been a while since we've been out, and clearly we're ready to socialize and have some good food in a restaurant.
And what's something that you've started doing during the stay at home that you want to keep going?
Well, basically, I've taken up a lot of those long-term projects that we put on hold for a period of time and said, I'll get to it when I have more time. Well, guess what? I had some time. So I clearly started to work on some of those. I'm going to continue on with those, but also just kind of enjoying reading more novels, watching a few more movies. I'm not a big TV guy or movie guy, but I've been watching more movies and enjoying them as well. So hopefully some of those things will continue as we move forward.
Your top choice right now, would it be a puzzle, a podcast, a board game, a good movie, or a good book?
I'd say probably a good movie right now, just because I'm not a big movie guy, and I've been really enjoying some movies that I haven't seen, and some that I hadn't seen in a long time, and I've really been enjoying that. It's been kind of fun.
Good. Okay, Tom, yeah. You're up. So what are you most excited about doing once social distancing is over?
I really need a haircut.
Me too. Me too. That's why I didn't put on the video today.
Exactly. Mine's been off, and I live with four women in my house, and as the only man in the house, I think I've got it, you know, self-trimmed and everything else, and then they will point out very quickly how far off the mark I am. So I need some professional help on that, and I can't wait for that.
Is there anything that you've started doing during the stay at home that you want to keep going?
I'll share this. I'm at a point in life where I have two daughters that are at university, and they're gone, and they're really at the point where they may never come back, if you know what I mean, where they're young adults and they're off and they're going to be working and going on careers. And the third one is a sophomore in high school. And you can see that on the horizon where she's going to be off very soon. So I looked at this as a gift that, you know, a once in a lifetime gift that we have, that we can all be together and we're forced to be. And there's got some trials and tribulations to that, but I'm looking at this as something that'll probably never happen again. And just looking at every moment as a gift with them, before they go off and have their lives and, you know, able to be together every minute of the day and enjoy each other's company. Hear things like my daughter playing drums behind my wall while I'm on a conference call. And that won't happen in a couple of weeks. And I just want to enjoy every second of that.
Oh, absolutely. And so during this family time, do you guys have a top choice? Doing a puzzle, a podcast, a board game, watching a movie, or reading a book together?
We've been doing a lot of those things, but I will tell you that on the dining room table, there is a 1,000 jigsaw puzzle picture of the city of Prague. My daughter studied abroad there last semester, and the color dynamic of this thing is by far the hardest puzzle we've ever done, and I don't know if we'll ever finish. It's been a pandemic-long process. So I think that's going to be telling that this thing's lasted as long as the pandemic.
Well, good luck to you on that. And thank you both so much for your time. And we truly look forward to navigating what's next together.
We want to keep this conversation going. Join us at compassgroup.podbean.com to listen to a new episode every week. If you have questions or a request, send them to envisiongroup@compass-usa.com. Until then, be safe and be well.